Okay, so again, we pretty much finished Rus. I want to discuss with you a few short ideas. Should not take all that long. And then we'll learn some Chumash. A few short closing thoughts on Sefer Rus. Okay, number one, the last couple of psukim, we came across this inconsistency in the Salma versus Salmoin. Let me open up the Sefer. Okay. Someone asked yesterday, we have 10 generations. We have 10 generations starting from Peretz leading all the way to David HaMelech. We view the 10 generations. Peretz, Hoyolidus. So yesterday we mentioned 7, right? Yesterday we mentioned 7. 7 was you are better than Shiva Bonim. It was a remiss to the 7th one. The 7th one starting from Peretz is Oyvet. But in total, when we go from the very beginning all the way down to the very end of the parak, there is a grand total of 10 names. There is Peretz, Chetzron, Ram, Aminadav, Nachshon, Salma, then we go to Boaz, Oved, Yishai, and David. The Medrash says, Hoasiri, Yihia Kodesh. One of the reasons why we're listing all 10 is the pasuk of Meister Behema. Meister Behema, every year you count 10 animals, and the 10th animal is holy, and that holiness is permanent. Hoasiri yihiye kodesh lo yachalifenu v'lo yomiro so toy bira rab v'toyvim homer yomer v'hoyu hu usmiro so yihiye kodesh. Malchus and Klal Yisrael in 1 degree, according to the Medrash, is captured in the pasuk of Meister Behema. Hoasiri yihiye kodesh. David HaMelech, his kedusha, his sanctity, this 10th generation from Peretz is kodesh, and his seed will always yoshev on the kisei of Malchus of Klal Yisrael forever. Lo yachalifenu v'lo yomiroso. It is impossible for his Malchus to be exchanged and be with another family, with another individual. Okay, I think the battery could be. Is in a better place. Okay. Now, why does it change from Salma to Salmoin? So I saw
two. Also, the Targum has two different spellings. Salma with a Sama.
The first one.
Yeah, Salma. The second one is Shin.
With a Shin. Okay, interesting. I didn't notice that. Okay, the Shalmoin Hoylid Yosef if son.
Right.
Okay, so one explanation I saw. This is a very interesting idea. Is that the Nun, the Radak says this, and so I think it's also mentioned by the Yalkut HaGershuni, to put this entire idea together. Every time we have a word, and a word ends with a Nun, thank you very much, it means, it connotes miniaturization. To make something, miniaturization, to make something small. For example, Ish means a man. What is an Ishoin? Ishoin bas oyin, the pupil of an eye. Why is the pupil of an eye called a pupil? Because inside the eye you see a teeny little man, a little ish. When you look at your friend, what do you see in your friend? You see it's a mirror. You see yourself. Ishoin bas oyin, according to some, Ishoin comes from the shorish of ish, but with a nun at the end, Ishon, with a nun at the end, to signify, to allude to the little ish. There's a teeny little man that can be reflected, that is reflected in the pupil of the eye. Shevesh, Shimshoin means a small son. I don't know, I don't have any examples. What's the starting point? The Nachash Moshe Rabbeinu, he made the Nachash. It says that also with the Nun. I don't have all the examples, but this is a rule. It's a rule. It's the Radak makes this rule that more often than not, when you have a word and the word concludes with a nun, it's coming to take a concept and to miniaturize it in a certain way. Here as well, Salma was a very great person. But when Salma gave birth to a child, Boaz, people no longer paid much attention to him. In other words, he started off as being, you know, Salma is, he is the Gadol Hadar. But when Boaz was born, and Boaz graduated from yeshiva and got a position as the shofet, the tzibur was so impressed and was so overwhelmed with. Is it better now? Okay. Okay, so Salma, his name was changed to Salmoin to indicate that Boaz was extremely great. Relative to all of the other people in this list, the children did not outdo the parent. The children, the father, normally have a rule that Niskatnu Hadoras, that as each generation passes, the generation gets weaker and weaker spiritually. But this was not true with regard to Salma and Boaz. Boaz was so much greater than his father, people lost respect, but the stature that Salma had was diminished because he was overshadowed by his son Boaz that was very great. So therefore he changed from Salma to Salmon to indicate that this is a good thing, of course, because Chazal say a person is jealous, is Makani, every single member of his craft, with the exception of your son. A person has no jealousy over his children. In fact, a person desires, has great nachas when his children outdo him. And the one in this entire list that was zocha to the bracha where he saw his child outdo him was Salma. Salma was the only one who had a son that was better than him, Boaz. And that's why his name changed from Salma to Salmon to indicate that he was diminished, at least diminished in the eyes of the world because of the greatness of his son. What?
He also had a father that
was better than him. Well, that's a given. When the father is greater than the child, that's derech kol aretz. That's the way Hashem made the world, that each generation successively gets weaker and weaker. But it's not normal, it's not expected the child should be greater than the father. It happens sometimes, but here we're dealing with these great people that are going lichas and miyachas all the way back from Paris. It was unexpected. But this was all part of, that's Boaz was the shofet, and he was greater than his father. So therefore people, that's why the pasuk is alluding to this by telling us that we went from Salma to Salmon Nun, means later in his life, when we connect him to Boaz, he was not viewed by the tzibur with the same degree of respect because he was overshadowed by his son Boaz. What? Well, Yishai was still greater than David, even though Yishai did not do averos. David, we know, committed many averos. So even though David was the Melech Klal Yisrael, David had a very rough beginning. David for his youth wasn't respected, as we mentioned yesterday. And then when he became king, for the first 7 years he was only the king in Hebron. And even when he became Melech of the entire Klal Yisrael, there were always battles, there was always trouble. Yishai was respected as being the Gadol Hadar to some degree. I mean, Chazal say he only died the Idya Shel Nachash. So even when it comes to Yishai and David, we don't make that difference. Only when it comes to Salma versus Salmon do we make that point, how Boaz now, he changed everything. Moshe and Amram? Well, okay, yeah, the times were different. You also have to know, did they live at the same time? Moshe disappeared. Moshe, he ran away. Amram probably died. I assume he died when Moshe was in hiding, or even before Moshe. I mean, over here we're dealing with the two generations overlap. They exist together. So when they exist together, who do you have more respect for, the father or the son? So typically, you have more respect for the father. The general rule is Niskatnu Hadaros. Here, both the father and son were operating. The father had a shtela, and the son had a shtela. There were two shuls right across the street from each other. And you ask a person, which shul do you daven in? I daven in the son shul. The son is a much better rabbi. He's a much better speaker. He's a much bigger lamed, a much bigger talmud chacham. He's dynamic, charismatic. He has all the miles. The father, yeah, he's a good guy. Before the son came along, the father was the only game in town. But now that the son is here, everyone is flocking to the son. How does the father feel about this? Chazal said that a normal, healthy father would have great nachas. We're very happy to see his son outdo him. If it was not his son, he would have a tremendous agmas nefesh, of course. But son, it's your child. That's what it's all about. Halavai, a person should have a son that outdoes him. That a person has no, he does not get upset. And that idea is hinted to over here in these change of language. It's a very beautiful idea. Yalko Gershuni. Okay, now we come to a medrash. The medrash is a little bit more simpler. The medrash says that until Salma, Klal Yisrael did not have kings. The king, in other words, there was no way that Malchus would have come to Klal Yisrael from the line of Peretz alone. We needed to bring into the nation Rus HaMoaviah. It's not normal, it's not to be expected that who would ever imagine, if you'd have told Yehuda, or that somewhere down the line you're going to have descendants that's going to marry a non-Jewish woman. You're going to marry Rus HaMoaviah, a controversial decision, Moavi v'loi Moaviah. That's going to bring Malchus into Klal Yisrael. So until Boaz married Rus, all of the people listed were viewed as princes, Nisim. When Boaz was born and Boaz married Rus, the leaders of Klal Yisrael were transformed from princes to kings, to Malchus. The story of Rus is a very significant story because it's the birth of Malchus. This is one of the very important things that we focus on, why we lay in Rus on Shavuos. In addition to receiving the Torah, it is necessary for Klal Yisrael to have built into the system a concept of Malchus, of kingship. Until the time David, till David came along, Shaul was the first king, there was no such thing as Malchus and Klal Yisrael. We had Shoftim. What's the difference between Malchus and a Shoftim? Well, there are many differences, but Malchus is many notches above the form of leadership of a Shoftim. And possibly one of the most significant ingredients of Malchus is honor, is kavod, is respect. Soim tasim alecha melech shetehei imasu alecha. Malchus is always associated with kvoid Malchus, the honor of Malchus. When a king comes, there is pomp and ceremony. Klal Yisrael was lacking kavod until Malchus was created. And the Torah in Parsha Shoftim says there will come a point in time when there will be a Melech. But that point in time was much later in the history of Klal Yisrael. They were not ready for this to step up, to bring the country, the nation of Klal Yisrael to a higher madrega of kavod. Moshe was a melech, okay, vahi b'shud a melech b'sasef rashayam, but Moshe, the malchus of Moshe was limited. Here, there is an establishment, there is an institution of malchus of Klal Yisrael. Malchus is kavod. This is the shleimus of Klal Yisrael, and that is why it's necessary for this to be read on Shavuos. It's not just that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah. Of course, Hashem gave us the Torah. V'atem tihiyun li mamleches koyhanim v'goy kadosh. You're going to be a mamleches koyhanim, a kingdom of priests. But to be a mamleches koyhanim, you need malchus. V'atem, what does it say in Parashas Yisro? V'atem tihiyun li mamleches koyhanim v'goy kadosh. Mamleches koyhanim, where is the malchus? Shalom aleichem, how are you? Welcome back. Where does the come mamleches? In order that the whole Klal Yisrael should be a whole nation of kings, you need to have at least a central king or an institution of malchus. And who is that? David.
Why?
Because that's the Navi.
You had Shaul. And if Yohanan would have lived...
Shaul and Yohanan was the beginning of the process. It was the introduction to David. It was a process. Malchus, nothing just happens instantly. Everything is a process. So the shleimus of Malchus came with David HaMelech. Sefer Rus is the yichus of David. It is the creation of Malchus. The creation of Malchus is a necessary, essential ingredient in the makeup of Klal Yisrael that goes hand in hand hand with the giving of the Torah. Kohanim means teachers. What are we teaching? We're teaching Hashem's Torah. But to teach the Torah, it has to be done in a dignified way. A dignified way means the Torah says, Mamleches Kohanim. In order that the whole nation can be a Mamleches Kohanim, there has to be a central king in Klal Yisrael, and that central king is David. That is why this Sefer is necessary for Shavuos. It's necessary to focus on this point. And where do we really come in the Sefer Rus, in the four parakim of Sefer Rus, to this essential point? It's here in this pasuk according to the Medrash. It's with Salma versus Salmon. We purposely change his name from Salma to Salmon to indicate there's now a shift. With the birth of Boaz, we don't look at Salma to be the same person. Until now, he was a prince. There were princes, there were leaders, there were shevtim in Klal Yisrael. But now, with the birth of Boaz, Salma, the father of Boaz, he's viewed to be the father of Malchus, the father of kingship in Klal Yisrael, which is a totally different dimension, a different takes Klal Yisrael to an entirely different level. Okay, that's one other way. Now another thing I just want to mention is Ram. According to the Medrash, Ram, there was another person that really should have come after Chetzor. Again, they have the ten names, the 10 generations. Chetzroin Choylid Esram. If we go back to Chumash, we will discover that there was an older brother. Ram had an older brother. His name was Yirachneel. Yirachneel. He was older to Ram. He was the oldest son of Chetzor. And really, the Yichus of Klal Yisrael should have come from him. He made a mistake. What was his mistake? He married the wrong girl. That's what it says. It says, "Vnei Chetzron Asher Noilad Lo Es Yirachmel V'Yesram." The Medrash says, "V'Lama Loi Zocha Yirachmel Shetetze Mimenu HaMalchus." Why did he not marry that he should be the father of Malchus? El Vnei Nasa Isha Goya LeHisater Ba. He married a non-Jewish woman. So you'll ask me, "Oh, but what about Boaz? Boaz did the same thing." That's exactly the point. The point is, see, that's the beauty of listing the ten names. There are a lot of secrets. We're listing 10 names, and seemingly two people did exactly the same thing. Boaz did exactly what Yirachmel did, and there's a very small difference in generation. So why did Boaz get away with it, and why did Yirachmel suffer? Yirachmel married a Goya, a beautiful woman, an orderless ater ba. It says in Divrei Hayamim, it says, her name was Natar Crown, a beautiful woman. So the answer is because he did it Shaloi L'Shem Shemayim. His kavana was not. Now, what we say Shaloi L'Shem Shemayim, on his level, I mean, for us, we're dealing with the Holy of Holies here. That means on his level, it was not 100% like it was in regard to Boaz, and therefore it was sidetracked. So this, in between the lines, we have a very powerful lesson these last psukim, is that you could have two people who do exactly the same thing. And yet, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he sees it all, to one person he will be rewarded, and one person will be punished. Boaz was rewarded, from him came out Malchus. Yirachmeel was punished, he lost Malchus because he did it Shaloi L'Shem Shamayim. Okay, now another idea I came across. Sefer Rus is the dogma of the Isha Tsanua. If we want to go focus on Sefer Mishle, Eish Eschal Meyimsa, all the various smilas of a woman. So Rus certainly captures. We even mentioned, I don't remember the details, but we mentioned this in the beginning, that Rus had all of the milas of all the 22 milas of Eish Eschal. Eish Eschal, there are 22 psukim, according to the letters of the Aleph Beis, and Rus captured all 22 milas. Are they opening the bar? Are they taking it out? I don't see anything. By Yehidin Soya Haran. Now we can sit. Okay, Yeshukayach. Thank you for showing me. Okay, Rus has all 22 milas. And among the milas we find in the Sefer is, in the beginning of the Sefer, was her mid of tsnius, discreetness, when she followed after the kaitrim to harvest, when the harvesters, they let her glean from what they left over, she stood back, and she did not bend down, she did not behave in a way that was immodest. And of course, what's very bizarre is, if she was such a tsnua, how then could it be that she goes to the field and lies down at the feet of Boaz? Okay, so that we discussed, that's all part of it. That it was l'shem shemaim. It was done with the advice of Naomi. But there's one very beautiful midah of tsnius that comes out at the very end of the sefer. Saw this in the Solasi Bamedinois, and it comes to the name, when they call the name Oyved. Some people have a tendency to brag about their children. It's not a good thing. Okay? It's good to have nachas. It's wonderful to have nachas, but not everyone has nachas, or at least the nachas that, and when people go overboard and they start telling you how great their children are and how successful they are, Not everyone wants to hear this, because not everyone has the same success. So you have to be very careful in how you praise your children in the presence of others. This idea is taught to us at the end of the Sefer, where it says the only one to call the name of the child were the friends. Vatikach Naomi as hayeled, let's read from the pasuk. The child was born. Vayikach boiz esrus pasuk gedal vatoymarna hanoshem el Naomi baruch Hashem. Vatikach Naomi as hayeled doesn't say anything about the child. The yeled means an infant. Just vatishser v'cheikav vatik vatihiloy le'oymenes. Privacy. Rus is not even involved. We discussed, did Ruth die, did Ruth live, Boaz, he did die. Who was the one that gave forth a name? It was the Shechenos, it was the neighbors that called the child by name. Now, when we say that they called the child by name, we discussed yesterday at Jewish that the shame was they gave a name to Naomi. They gave a name to Rus, because we discussed yesterday what Rus and Naomi did was scandalous. They had a child in such a way, and they married Boaz in such a unusual method, and Boaz died suddenly. It was a controversial psak halacha, so people distanced them. The neighbor says, listen, even though the world is putting you in cherem, do not worry, we're going to make for you your own community. We're going to call you Rus and Naomi, we're going to give you a shame. That's one interpretation. But simply means that the neighbors called the child by a name. That means, what about the parents? Didn't the parents call the child by a name? It's not important. The parents never even told their neighbors what the name of the baby is. And it could very well be, some commentators indeed learned, that the real name of the child, his name was Machloin. Or his name was Elimelech. His name was a different name. But the point where the pasuk is trying to hint to us was that the parents did not go bragging, look what we got. We got a child prodigy. We have this amazing child that's going to be Oyved. This child's going to be the Melech HaMashiach. They did not do that. Yahalolcha zar v'loy picha. Let other people sing your praises and not your own mouth. It was the Shechenos that sung the praises of the child. Vatikrenu lo ha-Shechenos shame. Lamar. And then they also went on to say, Yulad Bein La Naomi Vatikrena Shmo Oyved, and they called it Oyved Hu Avi Yishai Avi David. But the parents were discreet. And that's a message that people should be very careful when they come to talk about their children. They should not overdo it and rub it into other people. Okay, let's go to another short idea.
Oved, yeah. Oved, they take it says Oved Halilas Yishai, they took out the vav and put the vav beforehand. And the pasuk right before it says Oved with the vav in the middle.
Oved with the vav. Okay, I'm not sure. I don't know the answer. I don't know. Why is the mole?
Isn't that they changed
the name? Okay, I'm not sure. No. Sal, that's an entirely different name. The vav is a vowel. The vavs don't count. That the vavs are insignificant in how much weight they carry. Okay, there's another idea I want to share with you. I saw something very interesting in Rav David Cohen's Sefer Oil David. Rav David Cohen wrote, I think, how many volumes did he write on Tanakh? It's called Oil David. Rav David Cohen from Coney Island Avenue, Gvul Yavetz. So he has, in fact, an entire Sefer on Rus. And then he has, I think, like something like 10 volumes on Tanakh. And each volume he goes through the entire Tanakh. And here, in this particular volume, I came across something that I found very interesting. If you ever lay in Rus, anyone here have the opportunity to lay in Rus, especially if you lay in with cloth, you'll discover Rus, even though it's only 4 parakim, it's only 85 psukim, it's very difficult because there are a lot of krivichsis, a lot of them. And it can really throw you off. You have to add in words, you have to take out words, and many words are pronounced not the way they are spelled. In the parsha, maybe you'll have one, if at all, a whole parsha, maybe two. I don't know all the details. Ramesky is not here to give us the statistics of all the Krivik sieves in the Torah, but it's not all that common. But in Sefer Rus, we really go to town. So first of all, the question is, why is that so? What's the significance? So one answer on just a very simple level is that it's not like it seems. The concept of Krivik sieve is, you may write it one way, it may be written one way, but the way you say it is different. When you read the story, it's very bizarre. How could it be that this woman, she lies down at the feet of a man, the Gadol Hadar? What kind of Gadol Hadar is this? He marries a woman that lies down at his feet. He paskins the halacha in his favor. He's no gabedavar. There are a lot of questions. Elimelech, he runs away. The Gadol Hadar, he runs away. He abandons his people. They come back. There are a lot of questions in Sefer Rus. Chazal went out of the way in Sefer Rus to add an unusual number of krivichsifs, and that captures the essence of the Sefer. It's not like what it seems. There seems to be a lot of questions, a lot of things that were done that were unethical, shalik halacha, or improper. Actually, unethical, but things that are improper. But you should know everything was 100% according to halacha. Everything was done with Ruach HaKodesh, was done 100% l'shem shemaim. And no one should get the wrong idea. Okay, now he says, okay, this is just an interesting idea. He says something very interesting. He had the very last piece. Rav David Cohen is a super, super genius. He goes through every krivich siv in the entire Sefer. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. There are 15 in total. 15 krivich sivs in 4 parakim is a very significant number. Okay, it's off the charts from the rest of the Tanakh. And there sometimes is a ksiv v'loikri. There are extra letters that we don't read. And there are sometimes we read things that are not there. It goes both ways. Right? Sometimes in the Sefer, there are extra letters, or there are extra words, in fact. And we ignore it. We omit them. And sometimes there are things that are missing, and we add. So what he does is he takes the gematria, of all of the things that are written and are not pronounced, are not said. Like for example, Yaseh. Okay, Perik Aleph Pasiches. We don't read Yaseh, we read Yas. We ignore the Hey. Okay, Meida. Meida, we don't pronounce the Yud. The Aradati, the Aradit. Goes through all the different letters. If you add up the gematria of all of the letters and the words that are present, that are written but are not pronounced, it equals exactly 102. If you add up the gematria of all of the things that we read, that we insert into the pasuk that are not actually written, it's also exactly 102. So it's very interesting exactly. It's right, like this precision. That's very bizarre. What are the chances that in 4 parakim you're going to have 15 changes of of kriv chsiv, and yet, and then if you take note of the numerical value of each of these things, it balances out. So it goes to show that everything here again is done with the utmost precision.
The letter itself, but the gematria is like...
Okay, you're right, okay, it's an idea. Okay, I just thought, you're right, it's just something interesting to think about. Don't take it out of context. Let's not get carried away with it. I agree with you. No, he did. I told you, he's a super genius. His svarim are unbelievable. He has original. It's very, very hard to find today people who write original ideas, original thoughts. A lot of the things are just spin-offs. They're spin-offs of the old Yisoides. Yeah, the existing ideas. You go to the classics. You go to even the Rishonim, the early Achronim, the Kleyakar, the Chassam Sofer. You'll take a lot of the original, the great minds from 200 years ago, 300 years ago, five, and a lot of the people who are writing Svarim today, they'll take those ideas and they'll just make connections. Oh, what it says over here, you see over here an idea like this. And if you'll say something new, an original, right away you'll be shot down. But right away say to you, who says this? I told you this. I used to speak sometimes in two different types of shuls. One was a very modern shul. And then other times I would speak in a very yeshivish place, a real right-wing place. And I would say exactly the same thing. I would try to say original ideas. So in the modern shul, no one questioned what I said. They said, very nice, good, whatever. Well, they like it, they don't like it. When I would say the same exact thing in a very right-wing yeshivish, the first thing, without exception, someone would come up, who says this? Who? What's the makar for this? How could you say such a thing? Show me the source for this. And when you would say, it doesn't say it anywhere. Oh, how could you say such a thing?
As long as you don't contradict
something. Ein ochnami. Ein moshivin al hadrush. Okay.
What's the reason for that difference?
What's the reason for that difference? Think about it.
No. I want to hear you.
Whenever you say something, I'm always interested who says it, where it comes from.
Oimer Dover, maybe.
If it's a wonderful new Chiddush or you find more stuff in the guy. Who
absolutely, right, 100%.
Wow.
When I find the Sefer, and I really like a Sefer, I right away go to this, what else did he write?
Right.
And anything, on Shulchan Aruch, on Chumash, on Gemara. This person is I like this, I connect with him. He's a machadish. Every person has a different taste when it comes to Svarim. But in Achnam, you're right, when you find a thinker that you connect to.
If someone questions a speech, that means he's involved.
That's good.
Nice and they shake
so that's very good. That's right. I'm not criticizing the fact that they want to know. It's just a different mentality. It's a different way of being trained in learning. The people that are from the yeshiva world, they're trained in thinking that you have to always trace something back to the original source, and there's very little room to be machadish, because when you're machadish, it's questionable who are you to be machadish. We don't live in a generation today where we have, you have to be a big rashiva accepted in the entire world, whatever it is. Okay, but Rav David Cohen, his svarim are full of chidushim. And here's an example. Who thinks something like this? This is an amazing calculation to make who would come up with this, even to calculate all the different places in your Sefer Rus, who all over the world these things come together. Right. It's a brilliant observation. You have to have a brilliant mind to come up with something like this. Okay. Just to conclude now, I want to just do something a little bit more esoteric. I don't have clarity. You'll help me along. I didn't really prepare this well. Didn't prepare anything well. Certainly not this. But there are four parakim. Okay, this idea. This is not a complete idea. We're just stalling for time. Okay. The end of Mishpatzayis Zav. He points out. He has an addendum. After going through the entire Sefer, he writes a separate section. He obviously really enjoys this idea. It's a beautiful idea. So it requires a little more bayer what he means. There are four parakim. He wants to suggest the fact that Sefer was four parakim. Each parak is teaching us a different concept, a major concept in Yiddishkeit, in Yadus, the Yisodos of Emuna. And we all know from Pirkei Avos there are the world is built upon three pillars: Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. Al Shloisha Dvarim Ha'Omed Olam Omed, Ala Torah avoda gemilas chasadim. Torah avoda means serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and gemilas chasadim. You can say this in all different orders. Avraham was the pillar of Chesed. Yitzchak was the pillar of avoda, of serving Hashem, and Yaakov was the pillar of Torah. After now, this is where he really goes off the beaten path, and then he says, on top of the three comes Umevi Goyal of Nevinehem Leman Shmo Biava. After you have okay Avram, okay Yitzchak, okay Yaakov, and you focus on their milos, then when you synthesize all three together, you come to Geula, you come to redemption. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, each one of them gave us one of the pillars of one of the foundations of the world, pillars of that the world needs. We have to work on synthesizing all three together to bring Geula. So he wants to suggest that's what's happening here in Sefer Rus in the four Perakim. The first Perak focuses on Torah. Why does the first Perak focus on Torah? Rus was Megayer. Rus embraced the Torah. The whole first parak deals with the return of Naomi and Rus, and Rus's refusal to abandon Naomi, her desire to embrace her, to become part of Klal Yisrael. This is Torah. The second parak is the parak of Chesed. The second parak focuses on the kindness that Rus did for her mother-in-law, the kindness that Boaz did for Rus. The entire, every single pasuk in parak Beis is another act of kindness. In fact, some of them, that's the ikar part of Sefer Rus. Sefer Rus, the Medrash actually says the whole Sefer is just kula chesed.
And it's not necessary.
Because Shavuos Hashem did with us the ultimate chesed, giving us the Torah. The Torah begins with chesed and ends with chesed. It begins, Hashem is making chesed by creating man and giving man clothing and providing his needs. Ends with chesed, Hashem buried Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rus is chesed. But the truth is, the whole Sefer Rus is not all chesed. There are a lot more things than chesed. If you want to focus, where is the chesed to be found in Sefer Rus? The bulk of the chesed is found in Perek Beis, in the entire Mahalich of Rus and Naomi and Boaz and how they interacted. The third Perek is the Perek of Avoda. Why is the third Perek the Perek of Avoda? So here he's explaining, because the third Perek is the Nesoyon of both Rus and Boaz. When Rus goes to the field and she lies down, covers her feet, it must have been very difficult for Rus to do this. Can you imagine being told to do, to being given a mission? It's like a suicide mission. She said, he's going to curse me. If I'll go there, he'll discover me, he'll curse me. And we made parallels to Yitzchak, to the brachos of Yaakov and Yitzchak and Rivka. But Rus was omeid bin Esayon. She had emuna, she had faith in her mother-in-law, Naomi. She knew her mother-in-law was telling her to do this, alpi Ruach HaKodesh. She followed through with the plan at great difficulty and self-sacrifice. Boaz has the greatest nisayon. Chazal compare his nisayon to the nisayon of Yosef HaTzadik. They say it was even worse than Yosef HaTzadik, because Yosef HaTzadik was an Eshes Ish. She was a non-Jewish woman. Here, Boaz, a single man, she's a single girl, he's allowed to marry her, and so on and so forth, and yet, to maintain discipline and not do something that is improper required an enormous amount of discipline, enormous amount of siyata deshmaya. Therefore, there's a lot, what he's saying is a lot of truth. You have to just dig a little bit deeper to understand the depth of this concept. The entire Perek Gimel is the Perek of Avoda. So we have the three Perakim. It's not in the order. The order is, anyway, the order is done differently in different places. We have Torah, we have Chesed, and we have Avoda. And then the fourth Perek is the actual Geula, the redemption. The redemption where Boaz indeed marries Rus, and from that comes the Melech HaMashiach. So the fact that we have four Pesukim is not insignificant. The four Perakim is not insignificant. Each Perek is building us with one of the principles, one of the Soidais of Emunah, Torah, Chesed, Avoda, which in turn leads to Geula. And then he goes on to say something very interesting. This actually applies very... Avraham is Chesed, Yitzchak is Avoda, and Yaakov is Torah, a Torah, and then the Bonim, Umevi Gol of Nevinehim, the Yud Beis Shvatim, is do they synthesize the Midos of the Avos, Umevi Goyal of Nevinehim, the Bonim, and the Bnei Bonim is where the Geula comes from the Avos. And he goes, now here's something very interesting, which is this is an interesting idea. It ties very well into this week's parasha, back in last parasha, as well is the Degolim. How many Degolim do we have? Four Degolim. The Mishkan, when the Kali Shal traveled in the Midbar, when they encamped, the Arden was in the center, and it was surrounded by four camps. Four groups surrounded the Arden that was in the center. Each camp had a major figure, a main figure, and that main figure was surrounded by three times four for a total of 12. Now what, let's look at the groups of Shvatim. Okay, I'm a little bit confused, so you'll help me with this. We'll do this, I didn't prepare this correctly, but you'll help me with this. The first Degel is Degel Machane Ruvain. No, I'm sorry, that's the second one. I jumped. I'm sorry, the second one. Yehuda. Vayisa Degel Machane Vnei Yehuda. This is parasha. Good, fits well with this parasha as well. Degel Machane Vnei Yehuda Barishon Alitza Baisam. Okay, so who is the leader of this Degel is Yehuda. Who is at his side? Yisachar. Yisachar is at his side, and Zevulun. What does Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zevulun all have in common? So according to his interpretation, they all have in common Torah. What? What's the problem? Baloscha, Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Perek Yud, and last week's parasha as well. Last week is when the Golem were established. This week is when the Golem are traveling. So I'm just repeating, you can go back to parashas Bamidbar and do the same thing. We're already learning Bamidbar, so Baloscha. Perek Yud, Pasik Yud Beis. Vayisu v'nei Yisrael l'maseh b'amidbar Sina v'yishu n'amim b'mizor v'yisu b'rishon al p'yashem b'yad Moshe v'yisa deg machanei v'nei Yehuda b'rishon who's Yehuda b'rishon who's b'yal tzvon nachshon b'nei midov. This is a good verse for this week's parasha. We have here Yehuda, and Yehuda is surrounded by Yisachar and Zevulun. What is the connection between Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zevulun? This is the Degel of Torah. Degel HaTorah, one of the political parties in Eretz Yisrael, right? Degel HaTorah. Degel HaTorah is members only. Okay? Members only. No Lubavitch, no. Members only. I didn't mean that. I just, you know what I mean? Sorry, I could have said, no sorry. Members only. Who are the members? Yehuda, Yisachar, Zevulun. What do these three have in common? They all have a deep appreciation for Torah. Yisachar, Zevulun, it goes without saying. Yisachar learned Torah. Zevulun was the one who supported the Torah. Anyone could have supported the Torah. They went the extra mile. They took an investment in supporting Torah. And Yehuda is Malchus, is David. David from all of the Ishei HaTanach is the one that was Mechavev Torah more than anyone else. Torah Hashem Tmima Shivas Nafesh. We have all the psukim in Tehillim Kuf Yutes. David Shevet Yehuda. What I'm saying is a little bit raw. It has to be developed, but there's definitely truth to what he's saying. This Degel, the Degel of Yehuda, is the Degel HaTorah. Now, let's go to the next Degel. He develops this. I'm just being very makatzer, giving you the Rosh HaProkim. The next Degel is V'nosa Degel Machane Ruvain. What is Ruvain? Ruvain is Avoda. Why is Ruvain Avoda? Because Ruvain is the Bechor. Ruvain was meant to be the kahuna was meant to come from Ruvain, but because of Pachas Kamayim Al Toysar, so it went to Levi. But Ruvain really is the one that it's in his blood, the koyach of Avoda. Who else was Ruvain? Yaltsevo, and who was by his side? Shimon and God. God was the firstborn to Zilpah. God was also a Bechor to his mother. And what about Shimon? Does he explain here why Shimon is also? Well, you find by Dina, who was the one who went to wipe out Dina, it was Shimon. Shimon, what? And Levi. Well, Levi anyway is in the center. Levi is not part of the Golem. Levi goes with the Aron in the center. Who was the one who showed leadership in Klal Yisrael? Shimon. Shimon has the koyach of leadership. So there's more to this, but this is the Degel. What is leadership about? Avoda. The one that leads is the one that is the shliach. So this is the koyach of avoda. So this is the degel of what?
Weren't they worried? Didn't you learn in Dibri
Yomim? Okay, they were worried. The time Chazal, the Talmidei Chacham were the warriors. They were the warriors. So we have here the degel of avoda. Now who's the next machane? Vinosa degel machane Ephraim letzivoy sam. This is the degel of Chesed. Yosef who ha mashpir. Who a mashpir?
Like in Shever.
He's the one that provided sustenance for the entire world. Who is Ephraim? The son of Yosef. Ephraim, now we're dealing with what?
Even though Ephraim is known.
The Talmud Chacham.
Yes.
But he's still a descendant of Yosef. He has it in his blood. He has it in his blood to be the one that supports Klal Yisrael. The Al Nasadega Machane Ephraim, who was by Ephraim's side Menashe, another descendant of Yosef, who Hamashpir. And who's the third one? The third one, the Al Binyamin. Another one. Binyamin is also from Shevet Yosef. These are the three members of the Shevet of Yosef, Yosefu Hamashpir, the Degel of Chesed. So look what we got so far. We have over here, it's pretty good. It's the Degel of Torah, the Degel of Avoda, the Degel of Chesed. And then comes the last degel, v'nosa degel machane v'nei don, ma'aseif l'chol ha-machanos. This is the degel of Geula. Don is the ma'aseif. He is the one that, the sweeper, he's the one that comes at the end. Don,
the rear guard.
The rear guard, they say that today we're all Gilgulim today of Don. That's what they say in the Kabbalah Svarim. Today, and it's not everyone, but they say there's a lot today in this generation, right before the coming of Mashiach, there's a very great emphasis on Shevet Don. There are parallels in Chazal to Shevet Don and to the way we live, the way we exist today, because Don is the Ma'aseif L'chol HaMachanos. It's the end. It's the coming at the end, which represents the concept of the Geula. Okay, these are just raw ideas. And who is together with Don? We have Osher. I'm not exactly sure how Osher... Wait, let me just see. Osher and Naftali. Naftali certainly, because Naftali is the Koyach Tzvila. Naftali is Ki Naftuli Elokim Niftalti Im Achisi Gam Yecholti, is the Koyach of Tzvila, and Geula comes through the Koyach of Tzvila. There's no question about it. Tzvila is associated with Naftali. Osher, Ki Yeshuri Bonus, what is the significance? Again, there are loose ends, I don't know. But he suggests here that's the significance of the four Degolim. It's good for this week's parasha. This has to be developed a little bit more. But we have four Degolim, the Degel HaTorah, the Degel of Chesed, Degel of Avoda, and the Degel of Geula. And these four Degolim are paralleled in Sefer Rus with four Parakim. The four Parakim bring out the four different Yisoidos of Klal Yisrael, Torah, Chesed, Avoda, which is synthesized Umevi Gol of Nevenim Laman Shrom Yavo to bring Geula. Okay, now there's another idea, good idea I want to share with you. This is something which I have a lot of pleasure from. So make sure it's the last thing I tell you. I think I got everything. Okay. Before I get to the last idea, the literal idea, what do you take away from Sefer Rus? What is the underlying message? If I'm not mistaken, the Zohar, that's the way I read it in the Suras Amidos, he says the bottom message is should never be miyayish. There's one lesson you walk away with from Sefer Rus: never give up. People, life, there's always things that get you down, no matter who you are. Never be miyayish. The poster child of not giving up is Naomi. Naomi. What did Naomi? Naomi comes and Hazos Naomi. Can you imagine what they wrote up about her? What they said online about her? Hazos Naomi. Actually, it's nothing compared to what goes on online. Rav Meir will tell us all about the blocks. what's out there? Hazos Naomi. Could you imagine? And what did she say? Al tikrena li Naomi kirena li mora ki heimar shakai li me'od. Hashem has dealt very harshly with me. And what's the end of Sefer Rus? Yulad bein la Naomi. A child was born to the army. Yulad bein la na'ami. This is what the Zohar says, take away from Rus. The person upon whom the entire world said, there's no hope, hazos na'ami. Look what happened. Look at when it was all over. Yulad bein la na'ami, and from that bein came Melech HaMashiach. So you never know. You never know. A person should never be miyayish when things are rough. Just think about Sefer Rus. This is the message from the Zohar, what we should take away from the Sefer. Okay, we spoke about Malchus, the Kavod, the very important concept of Sefer Rus, brings back the concept of Malchus. I just want to mention, Malchus came from Rus. The truth is, this is a controversial idea. This is an idea, not everyone is happy with this idea, but I'll tell it to you anyway. Who was the one that invented the concept of Kavod? Okay, the world was created. There was Adam, there was Chava, Cain, Hevel, Shase. The world populated. There was Noach. There was 72 nations, 72 descendants of Noach. People lived. There were wars. They fought with each other. Who was the one that came up with this brilliant idea that we should have a melech? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the melech, of course. Hashem is the melech. But we should have Malchusa de Ara, Ke'en Malchusa de Rekia. There should be Malchus among us. We should take a person and we should put him on a pedestal and we should have respect for him and give him honor. We should carry his packages. We should protect him. Who was the one that invented this concept? So, it's not clear, but it appears, no, not Nimrod. Nimrod was the recipient of Kavod. But you need a melech b'loyam. Who is the one that actually gave kavod? The one that invented kavod. So you got to go look in between the lines in the midrashim. But it appears it was Terach. Terach was the inventor of kavod. Nimrod was only a melech because Terach made him a melech. You can't just become get. You want to be a melech. You have to have followers. You have to be voted in. Who's going to vote you in? Who's going to elect you? You have to have someone followers. Who was the campaign manager for Terach? Nimrod. It was Terach. And Terach was a person who recognized that in this world, in order for the world to survive, we have to have a leader, and we have to give the leader what he needs to succeed. Yeah, if you want a leader to succeed, you got to give him the tools to succeed. And part of that is you got to give him authority, you got to give him honor, respect, you got to create an environment where he can succeed. Terach saw Nimrod was a Gibor Tzayid Lefnei Hashem. Oh, you're a Gibor Tzayid? So you know what? We're going to build you a palace. We're going to make sure every single citizen in this world follows your orders. Terach, not bad. Terach had a son, Avraham. He invented Kavod. Had a son, but Terach is out of the picture. He was an Oved Avodah Zarah. But he had a good Maila, Terach. He had a good Maila. He invented something. Terach was discharged. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they are the Avos. Terach is not part of Klal Yisrael. When Rus came into Klal Yisrael, Rus brought into Klal Yisrael Terach. It was the return of Terach. Because Terach had another son, whose name was Haran. And Haran had a son whose name was Lot. And Lot had a child that was the father of Moab. In Moab was the Malchus, was the Kavod of Terach. And that was reintroduced to Klal Yisrael to back channels now when Boaz married. So okay, there's more to this idea. There's more to this idea, but Rus in Pesach, it's very disturbing. It's discussed. Why at the Seder do we mention Terach, Avi Avram, Vavi Nochar? We mention Terach and the Seder, the holiest time of the year. We're sitting at the Seder, Kodesh Kadosh, and we're talking about Terach. Who needs to mention Terach? You'll never mention Terach. You'll never hear about him. In all the Maamar Chazal and in our liturgy, we're not interested in him.
Although he is on the list of those whose name was repeated.
Was repeated twice? Terach, right after one of the order? Okay, whatever it is. But Terach is not a very popular figure in Chazal. Yet, Terach invented Kavod, Malchus. Klal Yisrael needs Malchus. That Malchus came back from the father Avraham. On Pesach we mention it. It takes 7 weeks from Pesach to Shavuos. What? Well, Lot is, that's the point. Lot is the connection to Terach. Because that's the only way we get to Terach is through Lot. Lot had Haran, and Haran had Lot, and Lot, from Lot came Malch came Moav, and Moav, so why do we need, why are we so desiring to bring Moav into Klal Yisrael? What does Moav have that is necessary for Klal Yisrael, that they should, that the Malchus of Klal Yisrael, it is a bizarre thing that we don't have from ourselves, we have to go search outside for Klal Yisrael? The answer is yes, because the Malchus is a very dangerous thing. Malchus is an abuse of power, you can lead to abuse, it's can lead to gaiva. Malchus is very great danger. Klal Yisrael first had to be nurtured pure, without the mida of Malchus. Only when they were ready, when Klal Yisrael was shalim, was complete, could now Malchus be introduced from the outside, where it would not harm the pnimius, the edelkeit, the delicate nature of the neshama of Klal Yisrael. This is an idea, it's a little controversial, this idea, but that is what Rus is bringing, this idea. Pesach we mentioned, Terach, and now here again we're mentioning. This type of thing is not popular today because this may have been, these ideas of searching for other nations to bring in their midos, maybe was good time of Chazal. Today you talk like this, in the 21st century you start like a reform conservative, they say these terrible things, we have to bring in blood, other blood. This is the worst thing. But you have to know how to differentiate between what was and what is now. Okay. Let's conclude with one last idea, last thought on Rus, at least for now, and that ties very well into this week's parasha. A lot of the commentators take note that there are exactly 85 pesukim in Sefer Rus. It's almost like they work backwards. They wanted there to be 85 pesukim, and when they discovered there are 110 pesukim, so they say, okay, so let's combine a couple of psukim together. Isn't that the impression you get? Some of the psukim are very long, yes. There are some psukim that you can easily divide into three psukim. You get the impression, who's been playing around here? Who's been sleeping in my bed? Right? Goldilocks. What's going on here? What?
The Christians were the ones who gave numbers to the psukim.
No, not necessarily. They get prokim, right? They get the prokim, not the psukim. They maybe have numbered the psukim, but they did not break up the psukim called psukut leposak Moshe Rabbeinu anan loy paskinan.
Once they were psukim, they gave the numbers.
They seemingly yes. I mean, they made the prokim, they made the chapters. So in the chapters, they made the verses. Right. But the psukim were already divided. We have a tradition. They were divided from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu.
With the pay.
No, not the pay. That also the psukos and stumos yes, and the psukim. Okay, there are some questions. Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about that it can very well be that we our Masorah and the psukim is not 100%. It could be there are psukim in Chumash which really were originally two psukim. So he talks about that our Masorah, it's questionable how clear, how accurate is our Masorah with regard to psukim. But in any event, there are 85 psukim, and there's some of them are very long.
I just want to be clear. When you start with Horeshi, for example,
period. Put the period. That was done by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu put a period there.
Right. So
this that is called chapter 1, verse 1, that was done by the Christians.
Okay.
We had a different numbering system, if there was a numbering system. But
why do we use
the
that
breakpoints? That's how it is. A lot of things are like that. Who made the daf and the Gemara? Also, the guy who made it. Now it's Kodesh, I've taken the pin test. Everything is a Messiah. What? The printer. They were not Jewish, the printers. Okay, well, that's how it is. But the psukim are from Moshe Rabbeinu. So here is, there are exactly 85 psukim. The question is, what is the significance of there being 85 psukim in Sefer Rus? So some say it's because it's Begumatria Boaz. Boaz is 85, so we should not forget that the main figure of the Sefer is Boaz. Now this Rus, there's a question, why is it called Sefer Rus? Should we call Sefer Naomi? Should we call Sefer Boaz? Who is the central figure of this Sefer? You can argue it's Rus, you can argue it's Boaz, you can argue it's Naomi. Naomi has enormous influence over what's taking place. We call it Rus, but Boaz's name is not to be forgotten, and it was cleverly done by making there exactly 85 psukim, the Gematria Boaz. Don't forget about Boaz. Okay, fine. What?
It's Mole the Vav. Usually it's Chaser Boaz.
No, Mulus Mole the Vav. The Vav is usually Mole, no? It's not Boaz? Oh, in the psukim. Okay, so let's assume it's Mole. All right, I hear. Okay, Enochanami. If it's going to be Chaser, then it's not going to work out with six short. But okay, let's assume that it's Mole. Boaz. This is what it says. I'm just repeating what it says. So this is the idea in a few swam. However, being that this week is Parshas Behaloscha, it opens up a new interpretation of why there are 85 psukim. How many letters are there in the parash of Ayihi bin So Ha'arayn? 85. Letters. There are 85 letters surrounded by upside down nuns. And the reason why they're surrounded by upside down nuns is to teach us that it's a sefer b'fnei atzma. And this has halachic implications if you have a sefer Torah. And the sefer Torah is completely worn out. Are you mechuyif to stand when they transport it? Are you allowed to save it on Shabbos if there's a delay, if there's a fire? Are you allowed to violate various takanas? The rule in Shulchan Aruch is if the sefer Torah, even though the sefer Torah has kosher, has over 300,000 letters, if you have left over 85 letters, you're allowed to save the Sefer Torah on Shabbos b'vnei hadleika. It has the full kedusha of a Sefer Torah. 85 letters, because 85 letters are Sefer b'vnei atzma. And that's what I hear. The two psukim is expashed. Even Saron v'yomoshe kuma Hashem uvenucho yomar. Two upside down nuns, 85 letters. What comes right before Vayihi bin Soharon? Vayoymer Moshe to Yisrael, who in this parish is called the Choyvav, Choysein Moshe. Right before we come to Vayihi bin Soharon, the immediately preceding chapter section is Vayoymer Moshe le Choyvav. Ben Ruel, Hamidyani, Chaysei Moshe, Noisim Anachnu, El Hamokam Asher Omar, Hashem Oysoetein Lochem, Lucho Itanu, Veitavnu Loch, Ki Hashem Diber Toiv Al Yisrael. Come with us. So the question is, what did he say? He said, I'm not going. Then Moshe persuades him. What would the ultimately go? Not go. Machlekes Rishonim, did he go? Did he not go? But v'hoyo ki selich imanu, v'hoyo ha-toiv ha-hu, ha-shayit yetiv, ha-shem imanu, ha-shem with you. And then it says they traveled. Vayisu mehar Hashem v'chulu v'chulu tupsukim more vayi bin sohara. What's the shaykhis between the two? I don't know, but the point I want to make is Yisrael is the first ger in Klal Yisrael. Chazal say all gerim that come to Klal Yisrael are rooted in Yisrael. The whole Klal Yisrael is a nation of gerim. Okay, ki gerim gerim is you have to mess a ger.
Erev Rav
are Gerim later. Erev Rav, they're a different type of Gerim. Okay, it's a good point, but
could have done it before.
Even before, it's a different category. Erev Rav is questionable. Okay, let's put that on them aside. But Yisrael is in a different league. Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Yisrael. Yisrael was Megayer. Why is he called Choyvav? Rashi on this pasuk tells because he was Mechavev the Torah. He had an intense love for Torah. That is the most important thing with regard to Geirus, Torah. A ger, once you want to join Klal Yisrael, you got to follow the rules. You have to observe the. You have to have a chavivus for Torah. Every ger, what?
Even through this examination procedure, you follow according to Rashi, I think in Yisrael, every god in the world is supposed to.
Right, but ultimately he came. He tested, but ultimately he did come to join Klal Yisrael. He was Megayah. There's no question about it. The question is, did he join? Did he travel Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, or did he go back home and come and join Klal Yisrael later on? We know in Navi there's his descendants. There's no question that at some point in time he did join Klal Yisrael. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. He was given a special portion. He was given Yericho. He was given a portion of the land Eretz Yisrael, the best land. All gerim are rooted in the story of Yisrael, who was called Choyvev. He was called Choyvev. He was Mechavev, had an intense love for Torah. Right after the story of Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu's discussion, his request, join us, you're part of us, join us, travel with us, we have Ayihi bin Soharon, which has exactly 85 letters. Is it not a coincidence that Sefer Rus has 85 psukim? And Rus is the story of Rus is the story of Gerus. It's the story of the Rus, the ultimate Ger. Not the first Ger, but the ultimate Ger, a person that comes from a nation that was not even allowed to come into Klal Yisrael. What is the message? What is Chazal? Why did Chazal? What is the message for us? Why Chazal organized Sefer Rus with exactly 85 psukim? Sefer Rus, Megillas Rus, it's true, it's the Megillah. It's one of the Chumash Megillahs, and the Megillah has a lesser status than a Sefer, but don't make any mistake about it. It's a Sefer b'fnei atzma. just like these two psukim that are surrounded with two upside down nuns, is a sefer bifnei atzmo, which are filled with numerous memory chazal, what that means, the significance of it being a sefer bifnei atzmo, and later when Mashiach comes, there's going to be a lot more added to what's a Torah Hadasha, it's a medrash that's going to be expanded, the depth of these psukim, what it means, Vayi b'Tzaharon. You should be aware, and also it's not in its right location, it doesn't belong here, it belongs backwards, 50 psukim, it has to be uprooted, put somewhere else, it's on the move. This Vayi b'Tzaharon, besides the fact that itself talks about being on the move, the parish itself is on the move. It should be put in a different location and transplanted. It's the same thing with Sefer Rus. It's a sefer bifnei atzma. It alludes to something a lot greater. It alludes to the coming of Mashiach, the birth of Mashiach, and the time of Mashiach. It's not in a mokom. Mashiach can come today. It can come tomorrow. Be'ita achishena. If you merit, it'll come immediately. If you don't merit, it'll come at its set time. Vayihi b'Tzaharon is not anchored to the sefer Torah. Upside down nuns. It's in motion. The coming of Mashiach is in motion. It's not etched in stone, when, where, how. It's all unfolding. It's dynamic. It's changing. Things are changing. That's the message of Sefer Rus having 85 letters. It's a direct parallel to Bahaloscha, the 85 letters coming after Yisro. Rus captures both of these themes together. Okay, with that we will conclude Rus, and Amir Hashem, on Monday we will start Eicha, Sefer Megillas Eicha, and the theme will be Amir Hashem 2 weeks from today.
Women invited.
Women are invited. You can bring your friends. Anyone you want to invite is more than welcome to come. And we'll make a seam on both, on Mishlei and Rus.